This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. While international criticism mounts, Robert Mugabe remains defiant. Yesterday, even South Africa, Russia, and China joined the rest of the United Nations Security Council on a resolution that denounced the violence in Zimbabwe and said a free and fair election was now impossible. Today, U.S. State Department spokesman Tom Casey said the world would reject the results of Friday's election if Mugabe declares himself re-elected as president. President Mugabe himself declared, "The West can scream all it wants. Elections will go on." Mugabe has ruled the country since the struggle for independence from Britain, but the old hero opened the way for the opposition by leading a once prosperous nation into economic disaster. As many as 3 million have fled starvation and unimaginable inflation. As the opposition grew stronger, Mugabe's ZANU-PF party, the army, and the police cracked down. Dozens have been murdered, many more arrested, and, reports say, tortured. Thousands have been beaten. Yesterday, the leader of the opposition, Morgan Tsvangirai, fled to the Dutch embassy in Harare in fear for his life. So what can other nations do now? Should they intervene or respect Zimbabwe's sovereignty? Later in the hour, Barbara Ehrenreich joins us to talk about her new book, This Land is Their Land. But first, the humanitarian and political crisis in Zimbabwe. What, if anything, should other countries do? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin with David Hurst. He writes the foreign leaders for The Guardian. That's the editorials in that newspaper. He joins us from NPR's studio in London. And nice to have you today on Talk of the Nation.
Hello.
And what can and should other nations do about Zimbabwe now?
Well, the statements of Ban Ki-moon statements of the UN Security Council are important in actually setting the overall tone. But what actually really matters is the reaction of African leaders, and in particular the Southern African Development Community, SADC, who are holding a series of meetings. They held one in Angola on Monday. And it's their reaction that really is critical, because Thabo Mbeki, the president of South Africa, is SADC's point man. We have criticised him in our leaders for his so-called quiet diplomacy, which we've called a cloak for inaction and procrastination. But it really is a question of pressure being mounted by Zimbabwe's neighbours that Sir Robert Mugabe may listen to. But here again, there are problems with that thesis as well.
Yes, South Africa provides much of Zimbabwe's electricity. Should Thabo Mbeki turn off the power?
I don't think there's any question of him doing that. But he could turn off the power. They're not paying for it. There is a issue about, in fact, how much electricity is actually being used by an economy that is on its knees. They've got inflation of 1.6 million percent. The country is in complete meltdown. But psychologically, I don't think Mr. Mbeki is prepared to do that. I think he is exaggerating his influence over a fellow liberation hero. And he's frankly not really in touch with what's going on the ground in Harare, which changes from minute to minute.
And nevertheless, you're talking about action from, well, there has been some statements from other leaders in Africa, but certainly not from Mr. Mbeki, who, as you say, the most influence in Zimbabwe. And at this point, quiet diplomacy has done very little, accomplished very little over many years.
Yes, I mean, I think we can probably go over the top in one's criticism of Mr. Mbeki. There are some analysts who say if it weren't for him, they wouldn't have had the first round of elections on March the 29th. There is possibly some point to that. But I think Mr. Mugabe is a freewheeling agent, and certainly the people in ZANU-PF around him are much more concerned about their own personal safety and their prosecution. I'll just give you one story. We're publishing this story tomorrow, and I think it's an indication of the difficulties of negotiating with ZANU-PF. Morgan Tsvangirai, the leader of the Movement for Democratic Change, his number two is the general secretary called Tendai Biti. Now, Mr. Biti was, until about 10 days ago, in negotiation with ZANU-PF in South Africa, and he thought he had safe passage back to Harare. When he got back to Harare, he was arrested. and charged with treason. And we have a story going in tomorrow's paper saying, from based on the evidence of one of Beatty's lawyers, Louis Uriri, who says that he's being interrogated not on the phony charges of treason, but by members of the Central Intelligence Organization. This is like the top thugs in the regime. And they want to know from Beatty what was said by their own ministers, the Justice Minister, Patrick Chinamasa, and the Labour Minister, Nicolas Gauchet, and what behind the scenes they specifically wanted to know whether there had been any individual agreements for amnesty from prosecution. Mm. Now, when you get one part of the regime arresting a negotiator from an opposition party to know what another part of the regime was saying, you have real problems of communication, let alone negotiation.
Also with us is Don Steinberg. He's deputy president of the International Crisis Group and a former ambassador to Angola. He's with us from his office in New York City. And Ambassador, nice to have you on the program today.
Pleasure to be here.
And there are some people who say that it is time not just to put pressure, time for more than words, to threaten perhaps military intervention.
I don't think military intervention really makes sense at this point. A lack of an understanding of what the actual goals would be. I think the security forces are relatively strong. I don't think there's a real justification for that. But I agree entirely that the international community has to essentially say that this is now a rogue regime. In effect, what has happened over the last 6 weeks is Mr. Mugabe has essentially staged a coup against his own government, against his own people. This isn't just a failed electoral process. There are increased reports that he indeed lost the presidency even on the first round and then launched a process of delaying the results for some 5 weeks to manipulate, to force a new runoff, and then has sent his thugs out into the streets. He's, as has been said, arrested the number two in the opposition party on charges of treason. He's refused to authorize poll watchers. And I think the final thing that broke the camel's back was his declaration that he intended to stay in office no matter what happened on the day of the election.
Yeah, he said only God could remove him, not the voters.
Only God, and last time I checked, he didn't have a voting card in Zimbabwe. And so the bottom line here is that Morgan Tsvangirai has taken a logical and, in fact, almost a moral choice of not having his supporters go to the polls and be mowed down by the thugs of ZANU-PF's supporters of Robert Mugabe. But I think another point that is very clear right now is that we're starting to see fractures occur. We're seeing fractures occur in the military, which is one of the reasons why Mugabe is no longer sending, to the extent he had previously, the military itself out to repress the opposition, but in fact is sending his armed thugs and the militias. We're seeing the vice president of the country, former generals, heads of the military services, quietly saying negotiations are the way to go. We may not be particularly comfortable with Morgan Tsvangirai, but we are sure not comfortable with destroying our country in order to save Robert Mugabe.
Let's get a caller on the line. Again, if you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And Manoa is with us calling from Kansas City.
Yes, Neil, thank you for having me. My thing is, I was in Kenya during the violence, and one of the things that the international community doesn't seem to appreciate is the will of the people really is so great, and they don't have the resources to confront these governments. And I wish that we could have either the AU.
The African Union.
Yes, the African Union. Or the United States to threaten the use of military force. I don't believe that Mugabe would do much if the use of force was threatened. I'm sure he would step down. Well, it's rumors that this was used in Kenya to tell Kibaki that he would go through military force if he didn't agree to a power-sharing agreement. And so I think that we should use the threat of either U.S. or African Union military force, like what was used in Haiti in the 90s.
Yes.
Yes. These dictators don't have a lot of military power, and they can be removed easily.
Well, David Hurst, as the ambassador said, the Zimbabwean military is not without its resources, and we've heard very little in terms of the AU, which has had difficulties summoning up a number of troops to serve in Somalia and Darfur, and certainly doesn't have forces ready to go at a moment's notice.
No, yes, I would agree with that. I mean, I think there is, I'm very, very sympathetic to your caller, and I'm very, very sympathetic to the blows that are being suffered by the Zimbabweans. But the threat of military action, I think, it really is a non-starter. I mean, there's a big difference for a start between the US or, let's say, Britain threatening military action and the AU threatening military action.
We have seen reports in British papers of contingency plans being drawn up in Britain.
Yes, we had. There was a report in the Times today. I think this would just be playing straight into Mugabe's hands, because he's said all along that the MDC is a sort of front for Britain and the white farmers, and that Britain is manipulating in a sort of Machiavellian way things behind the scene. I mean, this would totally feed into Mr. Mugabe's hands. And also, I don't think the AU could summon up either the military or the political will to do that. I think much more likely is more diplomatic pressure, but also vitally, let's not sort of run ahead of ourselves. I know the situation.
Ambassador, my question is, we haven't seen the kind of pressure that was put on Kibaki in Kenya, in Zimbabwe. It seems like probably there are no strategic interests. The European Union hasn't sent any negotiators. The United States hasn't. The African Union has not sent any negotiators like the way it was done in the Kenyan situation.
You can
say it, Ambassador, but you're going to have to say it in a minute if you just stay with us, because we have to take a short break. Manoah, thank you very much for the call, and we'll take up your point when we come back from a short break. We'll be speaking then with Ambassador Don Steinberg, who was Deputy President of International Crisis Group, former Ambassador to Angola, and more from David Hurst of The Guardian as well. Please stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the violence that's hit Zimbabwe in the weeks leading up to Friday's runoff election. President Robert Mugabe, of course, now running unopposed, with the leader of the opposition taking refuge in the Dutch embassy in Harare. Today, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations said the Security Council would consider further steps against Zimbabwe if Harare ignores a council statement declaring a free and fair election runoff impossible. He did not specify what those steps might be. And that's the question for many countries. What can they do? What should they do? 800-989-8255 is our phone number. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also check out our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. Our guests are David Hurst, the foreign leader writer for The Guardian newspaper in London, and Don Steinberg, deputy president of the International Crisis Group, monitoring the situation in Zimbabwe for ICG, former ambassador to Angola. Ambassador, when we left, you were just about to make a point.
Well, I think the time for threats, either military or otherwise, are over now. I think what we have to recognize is that the leaders of Africa have indeed stepped forward over the course of the last few days in a way that they had not before. If you look at what they were saying following the first election, it was all about the need for free and fair elections, the need to promote democracy. Now, essentially, they are saying, Robert Mugabe, your regime has no credibility whatsoever. Your election on Friday, we will take no credence in. And we're seeing leaders like Levi Mwanawasa from Zambia, who's the head of SADC. We're seeing leaders like Jakaya Kikwete from Tanzania, who's the head of the AU. And we're seeing even traditional friends of Robert Mugabe, including President Dos Santos of Angola, essentially say the time has come to negotiate a deal and make your departure. And that deal is what we all need to have to focus on right now. That deal would essentially have Morgan Tsvangirai come to leadership in Zimbabwe with the full participation of moderate ZANU-PF elements. And there are very many. The former
Just let me interrupt to say we've read that, in fact, Mr. Mugabe was considering handing over power after he lost the first round of the elections, and it was the army who stiffened his back and said, you cannot do that.
I think that's right. I think it wasn't just the army, but it was hardline elements both within the military and within ZANU-PF, both because they have tended to be extremely militant, but also because they're worried about their own skins.
Which raises the question of whether they would allow Mr. Tsvangirai to take power as a result of any deal.
Well, it's not a question of whether they would allow this. It's a question of whether they, as individuals within a military force that is now extremely divided. If you read the recent crisis report on Zimbabwe, you'll see a number of members of the military who are cited by name, who agreed to be cited by name, who have essentially said, enough is enough.
All right. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Dimitri. Dimitri calling us from St. Louis.
Hello.
Go ahead, please.
It seems to me that there's a frenzied drumbeat of opposition to Mugabe. I haven't heard one single voice that would speak out about the support the people who support Mugabe. Why aren't those people given a voice in all of this discussion? It seems to me that this is a total assassination of an individual who was duly elected to office. In good journalism, aren't you required, sort of ethically required, to give balance to the news and give the opposition views as well?
Dimitri, I'll tell you the truth. Pro-Mugabe voices are difficult to find. David Hurst, would you have that same experience?
Yes.
Hold on. I've just asked somebody a question, Dimitri. You can come back later. Go ahead, David, please.
They're very difficult to find. I mean, we put a lot of effort into our reporting of Zimbabwe. We have a very brave reporter at the moment, Chris McGreal, who has been called a spy in the pro-government, the state newspaper. And he's in Harare at the moment, risking arrest because he does not have a visa to report. And we put an awful lot of effort into establishing the facts. We're not simply, rewriting the wires. What's going on is terror. It's a campaign of terror. There are so many documented examples of it, and the latest I'm reading from a Human Rights Watch report is people being pulled off a commuter bus and then being given a test as to where their loyalty lay. And if they failed that ZANU-PF test, they were beaten very severely on the buttocks for the whole of the night. Now, there are many, many examples of this sort of intimidation. If you say, well, are there people who have genuinely supported ZANU-PF? Yes, there are people and party supporters, and there are parts of the country which in the first round of the election voted for Mugabe. And we report this, and we reported their views. But since the first round of elections, the atmosphere has changed totally. This is not an election anymore that anyone can recognize. This is a campaign of terror, and we have to say things as they really are.
Dimitri, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It seems to me that if nearly half of the country voted for Mugabe, shouldn't their voices be heard? I think that it would be...
I'm not sure what that is, Dimitri.
I said, shouldn't their voices be heard as well? It seems to me that since this morning, this station has been broadcasting anti-Mugabe rhetoric, and there's no balance, and I'm very disappointed.
So. All right. Thanks very much for the call.
Well, if I can comment...
go ahead, Ambassador.
If you have someone on your show who's talking about anti-Semitism, I don't think you need an anti-Semite on the show to balance things off to begin with. Secondly, I have to confess that I originally was a very strong supporter of Robert Mugabe. I have great respect for what he did during the 1970s and for a little bit of the 80s. in terms of trying to build a new country out of what had been an exceptionally racist and unequal environment. And I even had some sympathy for his efforts to disempower a white small minority who had been exercising extreme power over the economic life of his country.
The farmers,
but also business individuals, etc. But the bottom line is that he has not, in the past decade, pursued a policy of empowerment of blacks. He's not pursued a policy which is going to overcome the inequities of the society. He's essentially pursued a policy which is designed to help his own cronies, to help his henchmen, and to conserve his position in power. And so the sympathy that many of us felt for him long ago has finally dissipated, and we've all been able to see this for what it is, which has been well described as a campaign of terror against his own people.
Let's get another caller in. This is Salek. Salek with us from Louisville in Kentucky.
Thank you.
Go ahead, please.
My suggestion is reconciliation or negotiation with the president of Zimbabwe, because I think that the military intervention would destroy the country, and with a negotiation, it would save lives and save the infrastructure of the country instead. The reconciliation with President Mugabe would be giving him some advantage when he stepped out from the regime, and making sure that the money that the AU would spend to kill people or to destroy the country would be spent in to put the leaders in a way where he feels that he will be safe when he steps out from the regime. And I think this is going to be right in the case of all dictators in the Third World, because most of them stay in the regime just because the feeling that when they step out, other tribes or other party will revenge from them.
Yes,
or
well,
from him.
Take revenge on them. Yes. David Hurst, that's been discussed as part of a possible package, an agreement with Mr. Mugabe and others in ZANU-PF and maybe in the military, some protection against prosecution, and also a prospect of a package of loans and grants to Zimbabwe to help it in a transition period once the Mugabe regime cedes power.
Yes, I mean, I think there are a wide range of possibilities, but the last thing you said is the crucial point. Once Mugabe cedes power, he has to go first. This is not a repeat of the Kenyan situation, where after a disputed election and 1,500 deaths, you had a foreign diplomatic intervention, and the sitting president, Mwai Kibaki, ceded power or had a power-sharing agreement with his main challenger, Raila Odinga, for a very simple reason, that there can be no situation in which, or no credible situation, in which Mugabe carries on as president and Tsvangirai his executive prime minister. Mm. And this is a real problem. Mugabe has to go first.
Is there any belief that those who were ruling with him, again, the hardliners that the ambassador mentioned in ZANU-PF and of course, military leaders as well, but that they will simply ask Mr. Mugabe to go after a decent interval, after this Friday's sham election, and then appoint someone to take over who might be somewhat more acceptable?
I honestly can't answer that question. I don't think anyone can. I think the situation is very unpredictable. It's very, very unstable. There are, as the ambassador has said, there were plenty of indications of splits in the army. There have been lots of tip-offs themselves, so that the MDC officials know when to flee because someone is phoning up and saying, look, an army convoy is on its way to arrest you. So we know that there are plenty, the MDC has plenty of sympathisers within the police and the army, and I'm sure there are elements in ZANU-PF who would certainly form part of a national unity government. But on the other hand, and on the negative side, there are an awful lot of people with blood on their hands, and more blood is being shed simply because it's pure question of crime and punishment. Mm. They are very unstable, and they don't know about their own personal security. So they're continuing forward the only way they know, with a campaign of terror. I think we mustn't get ahead of ourselves. I think the first thing that's got to happen is that when this election is held on Friday, when the runoff is so-called runoff is held on Friday, what has to happen first is that all African leaders with one voice have to say we don't recognise the result. There has to be an AU statement or a SADC statement saying we do not recognise this result as legitimate.
And do you think Mr. Mbeki, in particular, as the key figure here, that he's willing to join that now?
I don't know. On past performance, I doubt it, but he is under an awful lot of internal pressure, and it is building, not just outside South Africa, but within the ANC itself. And so I think he's losing his authority to speak on Zimbabwe.
We're talking with David Hurst of The Guardian newspaper in London and with Don Steinberg, former U.S. ambassador to Angola, now deputy president of International Crisis Group, about the crisis in Zimbabwe. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Greg is on the line. Greg's calling us from Oakland in California.
Yes. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. I agree that the program, maybe not intentionally, has a lot of anti-Mugabe rhetoric, and I think that the West needs to, one, pay their reparations like the British have promised to pay to the farmers, and I think the West should let Mugabe work out his own problems in Zimbabwe, because the British had control a lot longer than Mugabe, and they never had any elections for blacks. So I feel that your British commentator and any of the British commentators are extremely disingenuous because of their provenance of just basically robbing, looting, and stealing, and then they poisoned the water with anthrax when they left. So I don't see where the British figure in it at all, and I think that Mugabe and Zimbabwe can solve their problems without the West. It might not be within the same time frame that the West needs, because the West needs to get in there and steal their resources now, and that might not be possible. But I do think Mugabe and Zimbabwe can solve their own problems without the West.
And Mr. Ambassador, do you think he's talking about the West, and I know both of you have been talking about particularly African solutions, but clearly Mr. Mugabe's appeal is not limited to Zimbabwe.
We have a situation here where some 3 million people have had to flee Zimbabwe, where infant mortality rates have zoomed up to almost astronomic levels. So we are seeing a situation where literally hundreds of thousands of people have been displaced within their own country. Botswana had to build an electrified fence to keep the Zimbabweans from coming across the border. This is not a situation of the West trying to put its own values or standards on an African country. It's a situation of a leader in a country who has essentially abandoned the interests of his country in pursuit of his own power-hungry regime. Morgan Tsvangirai is not a stooge of the West. That is an absurd statement to make. Morgan Tsvangirai is a leader who has been beaten by this regime, imprisoned by this regime. His deputy is now being threatened with treason for simply stating the truth, as we all know it, that Mugabe probably lost the first round. And had he accepted that result, he wouldn't be in power, and we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. I also think it's a little unfair to attack my colleague with charges of imperialism. Unless I'm mistaken, he probably wasn't in the British government during the colonial period and certainly wasn't an Ian Smith supporter.
Yeah, but that was before I was born, yes.
In any case, Greg, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. And we have to leave it there. And David Hurst, thank you for your time today. And thank you for listening quietly those last couple of minutes.
Thank you.
David Hurst, the foreign leader writer for The Guardian newspaper in London. And Don Steinberg, who you just heard, the former U.S. ambassador to Angola, now deputy president of International Crisis Group, monitoring the Zimbabwe situation for the ICG. Coming up, Barbara Ehrenreich aims squarely at the economic divide in the United States. We'll ask her what can be done to fix it. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.